Chapter 38. Against the wall. A hard family likeness was on all these things. The room was kept like this, wrote Smith, apostrophe said Mr. Boffin, against the son's return. In short, everything in the house was kept exactly as it came to us, for him to see and approve. Even now, nothing is changed, but our own room below stairs, that you have just left. When the son came home for the last time in his life, and for the last time in his life saw his father, it was most likely in this room that they met. Apostrophe, as the secretary looked all round it, his eyes rested on a side door in a corner. Another staircase, apostrophe said Mr. Boffin, unlocking the door, leading down into the yard. We'll go down this way, as you may like to see the yard, and it's all in the road. When the son was a little child, it was up and down these stairs, that he mostly came and went to his father. He was very timid of his father. I've seen him sit on these stairs, in his shy way, poor child, many a time. Mr. and Mrs. Boffin have comforted him, sitting with his little book on these stairs, often. Apostrophe, ah. And his poor sister too, apostrophe said Mrs. Boffin. And here's the sunny place on the white wall, where they one day measured one another. Their own little hands wrote up their names here, only with a pencil. But the names are here still, and the poor dear's gone forever. Apostrophe, we must take care of the names, old lady, apostrophe said Mr. Boffin. We must take care of the names. They shan't be rubbed out in our time, nor yet, if we can help it, in the time after us. Poor little children. Apostrophe, apostrophe, ah, poor little children. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mrs. Boffin. They had opened the door at the bottom of the staircase giving on the yard, and they stood in the sunlight, looking at the scrawl of the two unsteady childish hands two or three steps up the staircase. There was something in this simple memento of a blighted childhood, and in the tenderness of Mrs. Boffin, that touched the secretary. Mr. Boffin then showed his new man of business the mounds, and his own particular mound which had been left him as his legacy under the will, before he acquired the whole estate. It would have been enough for us, apostrophe said Mr. Boffin, in case it had pleased God, to spare the last of those two young lives and sorrowful deaths. We didn't want the rest. Apostrophe, at the treasures of the yard, and at the outside of the house, and at the detached building which Mr. Boffin pointed out as the residence of himself, and his wife during the many years of their service, the secretary looked with interest. It was not until Mr. Boffin had shown him every wonder of the bower twice over, that he remembered his having duties to discharge elsewhere. You have no instructions to give me, Mr. Boffin, in reference to this place? Apostrophe, apostrophe, not any, Rokesmith. No. Apostrophe, might I ask, without seeming impertinent, whether you have any intention of selling it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, certainly not. In remembrance of our old master's children, and our old service, me and Mrs. Boffin mean to keep it up as it stands. Apostrophe, the secretary's eyes glanced with so much meaning in them at the mounds, that Mr. Boffin said, as if in answer to a remark. That's another thing. I may sell them, though I should be sorry to see the neighborhood deprived of them too. It'll look but a poor dead flat without the mounds. Still I don't say that I'm going to keep them always there, for the sake of the beauty of the landscape. There's no hurry about it. That's all I say at present. I ain't a scholar in much, Rokesmith, but I'm a pretty fair scholar in dust. I can price the mounds to a fraction, and I know how they can be best disposed of, and likewise that they take no harm by standing where they do. You'll look in tomorrow, will you be so kind? Apostrophe, apostrophe, every day. And the sooner I can get you into your new house, complete, the better you will be pleased, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, it ain't that I'm in a mortal hurry, apostrophe said Mr. Boffin. Only when you do pay people for looking alive, it's as well to know that they are looking alive. Ain't that your opinion? Apostrophe, quite. ... replied the secretary, and so withdrew. Now, ... said Mr. Boffin to himself, subsiding into his regular series of turns in the yard, if I can make it comfortable with Wegg, my affairs will be going smooth. ... The man of low cunning had, of course, acquired a mastery over the man of high simplicity. The mean man had, of course, got the better of the generous man. How long such conquests last is another matter. That they are achieved is everyday experience, not even to be flourished away by Podsnappery itself. The undesigning Boffin had become so far imaged by the wily Wegg that his mind misgave him. He was a very designing man indeed in purposing to do more for Wegg. It seemed to him so skillful was Wegg that he was plotting darkly when he was contriving to do the very thing that Wegg was plotting to get him to do. And thus, while he was mentally turning the kindest of kind faces on Wegg this morning, he was not absolutely sure but that he might somehow deserve the charge of turning his back on him. For these reasons Mr. Boffin passed but anxious hours until evening came, and with it Mr. Wegg, stumping leisurely to the Roman Empire. At about this period Mr. Boffin had become profoundly interested in the fortunes of a great military leader known to him as Bully Sawyers, but perhaps better known to fame, and easier of identification by the classical student, under the less Britannic name of Belisarius. Even this general's career paled in interest for Mr. Boffin before the clearing of his conscience with Wegg. And hence, when that literary gentleman had according to custom eaten and drunk until he was all aglow, and when he took up his book with the usual chirping introduction, "And now, Mr. Boffin, sir, we'll decline and we'll fall." ... Mr. Boffin stopped him. "You remember, Wegg, when I first told you that I wanted to make a sort of offer to you? ... Let me get on my considering cap, sir," replied that gentleman, turning the open book face downward. "When you first told me that you wanted to make a sort of offer to me. Now let me think."
As if there were the least necessity.
"Yes, to be sure I do, Mr. Boffin. It was at my corner. To be sure it was. You had first asked me whether I liked your name, and candor had compelled a reply in the negative case. I little thought then, sir, how familiar that name would come to be." ... "I hope it will be more familiar still, Wegg."
Do you, Mr. Boffin? Much obliged to you, I'm sure. Is it your pleasure, sir, that we decline and we fall? ...
With a feint of taking up the book. "Not just yet awhile, Wegg. In fact, I have got another offer to make you."
Mr. Wegg, who had had nothing else in his mind for several nights, took off his spectacles with an air of bland surprise.
"And I hope you'll like it, Wegg."
"Thank you, sir," returned that reticent individual. "I hope it may prove so. On all accounts, I am sure."
This, as a philanthropic aspiration.
"What do you think," said Mr. Boffin, "of not keeping a stall, Wegg?"
"I think, sir," replied Wegg, "that I should like to be shown the gentleman prepared to make it worth my while."
"Here he is," said Mr. Boffin. Mr. Wegg was going to say, "my benefactor," and had said "my bean," when a grandiloquent change came over him.
"No, Mr. Boffin, not you, sir. Anybody but you. Do not fear, Mr. Boffin, that I shall contaminate the premises which your gold has bought with my lowly pursuits. I am aware, sir, that it would not become me to carry on my little traffic under the windows of your mansion. I have already thought of that, and taken my measures.
No need to be bought out, sir. Would Stepney Fields be considered intrusive?
If not remote enough, I can go remoter. In the words of the poet's song, which I do not quite remember: "Thrown on the wide world, doomed to wander and roam, bereft of my parents, bereft of a home, a stranger to something, and what's his name, Joy, behold little Edmund the poor peasant boy. And equally, apostrophe said Mr. Wegg, repairing the want of direct application in the last line, behold myself on a similar footing. Apostrophe apostrophe, now, Wegg, 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 apostrophe remonstrated the excellent Boffin. You are too sensitive. Apostrophe, I know I am, sir, apostrophe returned Wegg, with obstinate magnanimity. I am acquainted with my faults. I always was, from a child, too sensitive. Apostrophe, but listen, apostrophe pursued the Golden Dustman, hear me out, Wegg. You have taken it into your head, that I mean to pension you off. Apostrophe, true, sir, apostrophe returned Wegg, still with an obstinate magnanimity. I am acquainted with my faults. Far be it from me to deny them. I have taken it into my head. Apostrophe, but I don't mean it. Apostrophe, the assurance seemed hardly as comforting to Mr. Wegg, as Mr. Boffin intended it to be. Indeed, an appreciable elongation of his visage might have been observed as he replied. Don't you, indeed, sir? Apostrophe apostrophe, no, apostrophe pursued Mr. Boffin, because that would express, as I understand it, that you were not going to do anything to deserve your money. But you are, apostrophe that, sir, apostrophe replied Mr. Wegg. Cheering up bravely is quite another pair of shoes. Now, my independence as a man is again elevated. Now, I no longer weep for the hour when to Boffin's bower the lord of the valley with offers came. Neither does the moon hide her light from the heavens tonight and weep behind her clouds or any individual in the present company's shame. Please to proceed, Mr. Boffin. Apostrophe, thank ye, Wegg. Both for your confidence in me, and for your frequent dropping into poetry, both of which is friendly. Well then, my idea is, that you should give up your stall, and that I should put you into the bower here, to keep it for us. It's a pleasant spot, and a man with coals and candles, and a pound a week might be in clover here. Apostrophe, hem. With that man, sir, we will say that man, for the purposes of argument. Apostrophe Mr. Wegg made a smiling demonstration of great perspicuity here. Would that man, sir, be expected to throw any other capacity in, or would any other capacity be considered extra? Now let us, for the purposes of argument, suppose that man to be engaged as a reader. Say, for the purposes of argument, in the evening. Would that man's pay as a reader in the evening be added to the other amount, which, adopting your language, we will call clover, or would it merge into that amount, clover? Apostrophe apostrophe, well, apostrophe said Mr. Boffin, I suppose it would be added. Apostrophe, I suppose it would, sir. You are right, sir. Exactly my own views, Mr. Boffin. Apostrophe here Wegg rose, and balancing himself on his wooden leg, fluttered over his prey with extended hand. Mr. Boffin, consider it done. Say no more, sir, not a word more. My stall and I are forever parted. The collection of ballads will in future be reserved for private study, with the object of making poetry tributary. Wegg was so proud of having found this word, that he said it again, with a capital letter tributary, to friendship. Mr. Boffin, don't allow yourself to be made uncomfortable by the pang it gives me to part from my stock and stall. Similar emotion was undergone by my own father, when promoted for his merits from his occupation as a waterman to a situation under government. His Christian name was Thomas. His words at the time, I was then an infant, but so deep was their impression on me, that I committed them to memory, were, then farewell my trim-built wherry, oars and coat and badge farewell. Never more a Chelsea ferry, shall your Thomas take a spell. My father got over it, Mr. Boffin, and so shall one. Apostrophe, while delivering these valedictory observations, Wegg continually disappointed Mr. Boffin of his hand, by flourishing it in the air. He now darted it at his patron, who took it, and felt his mind relieved of a great weight. Observing that as they had arranged their joint affairs so satisfactorily, he would now be glad to look into those of Bully Sawyers, which, indeed, had been left overnight in a very unpromising posture, and for whose impending expedition against the Persians the weather had been by no means favorable all day. Mr. Wegg resumed his spectacles therefore. But Sawyers was not to be of the party that night. For, before Wegg had found his place, Mrs. Boffin's tread was heard upon the stairs, so unusually heavy and hurried, that Mr. Boffin would have started up at the sound, anticipating some occurrence much out of the common course, even though she had not also called to him in an agitated tone. Mr. Boffin hurried out, and found her on the dark staircase, panting, with a lighted candle in her hand. "What's the matter, my dear? I don't know, but I wish you'd come upstairs." Much surprised, Mr. Boffin went upstairs and accompanied Mrs. Boffin into their own room, a second large room on the same floor as the room in which the late proprietor had died. Mr. Boffin looked all round him, and saw nothing more unusual than various articles of folded linen on a large chest, which Mrs. Boffin had been sorting. "What is it, my dear? Why, you're frightened." "You frightened? I am not one of that sort, certainly," said Mrs. Boffin, as she sat down in a chair to recover herself, and took her husband's arm. "But it's very strange." "What is, my dear?" Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.